Well, as sad as it sounds and terrible, the reason I think they would have done it in those times is to take back proof to Derby from the tunnel region where it happened, and consequently, he's as the research has gone so far, and our research is being led by the same lady that worked with the late Ken Colbung to find Jagan's head. And Dr. Cressida Ford, and Cressida, who currently works at IATSIS, has been working with us since 2003 to meticulously put together the trail. And in the days that we understand his head was cut off and brought into Derby, we've tracked it through documented evidence and also oral interviews with former employees of the factory in England, in Birmingham.
Tell us about the trail, where John Damara's head went when it left Australia.
The real positive evidence that we have is went cold about 1965. We've tracked it that far. And basically there was the all guns that were provided to the police, and very popular guns like shotguns and that were produced by W.W. Greener in Birmingham, and a lot of his guns and antiques, which are antiques now, were highly prized. Some of them worth $100,000, $25,000 each now. But the W.W. Greener had an agent in Australia, and was all it was commonly known he was on the look for a notorious sort of leaders that potentially his gun had shot. And in this case, Greener, whose agent at the time was Arthur Buckland in Australia, had sort of through a following the incident, had acquired John Damara's head via Melbourne and went to England, Birmingham.
For his personal trophy collection.
Well, as we understand, he had a quite an extensive collection, not only not of human skulls though, mainly of birds and animals, and even had a thylacine from Australia. And he kept a private collection in his gun factory in Birmingham. And in around about the 60s, 1967, the factory was acquired by the local government for the purposes of a development of a ring road in Birmingham. So he's the last director of that factory was Leighton Greener, and he set about dispersing the collection to various sort of institutions. And we have a very positive sort of view that the two skulls, two Aboriginal skulls that were held in that collection, one of being John Damara, had been possibly dispersed to one of the Birmingham institutions, maybe the med school or maybe the museum itself.
So, how close are you to finding this precious piece of Kimberley history?
Well, I noticed in your in induction about half an hour ago, listening on the radio in the car coming here, you said that we'd actually identified a museum. Well, that's not true. As much as we would like to,
You're close, aren't you,
we're
though?
very close. I mean, we've just recently been given access to the Birmingham collection at the museum, and also the museum held a collection from the Birmingham Medical School, and there's a collection, large collection, anthropological collection of Aboriginal skulls there, numbering, I think it's about 150. And Birmingham is one of the last sort of institutions that haven't really participated in the repatriation scheme. So I would hope in time all of those skulls get returned to Australia from whence they came. But we have a high interest in about five of them at the moment.
So you've narrowed the collection down to five potential ones because it sounds like it's not labelled.
No, the difficult thing is the actual registrar of the skull collection has either been lost or can't be found. But Cressida has just recently been over to England, and it's quite a extensive facility, and as with a lot of old museums in the world, there's a lot of boxes that lay around in alcoves and under stairs and that. So,
and that's been a big issue, hasn't it, for so many of the remains and the sacred objects that have already been repatriated yes. from different institutions around the world. So many of them don't come with labels and are very general in the region they were collected or stolen from.
Yeah, well, the Kimberley Aboriginal Law and Culture Centre has been, CALAC, has been quite prominent in the last few years of working with the repatriation process on behalf of its members, you know, including Bunuba people. And sadly, for many of the human remains that have come back and are being held in Fitzroy Crossing, there are no names, so it's going to be quite a challenge for Indigenous people in the Kimberley to work together on what to do with them. And you've seen publicly or in documented evidence the burial of ones that are known.
Just how important is it for the Bunuba community to have Jundamara's head repatriated to the Kimberley?
Well, you've recently seen the play, Vanessa?
Yes, at Wingina Gorge.
Yeah, and I've been asked many times how was it for people that weren't there. And I always say it's fantastic, the involvement of our Bunuba people, and both in the play and in the recent documentary that was produced by Eileen and Mitch Torres, that our local Bunuba people were involved and the participation of the people to tell the story. But you've had to be on site in situ at Wingina Gorge to be able to feel the power of the play. And that whole significance, Jundamara, and the whole time of the 1890s right through till about 1940s, the whole impact on our Bunuba people, and especially in the reduction of our population and numbers. So it's very important and significant that members of our community be returned to their homelands, as with the repatriation scheme, but in particular a very prominent person to Bunuba people, a special person, gets returned to his country. And so this search has been going on since 2003, and it's more than just keeping our fingers crossed. We've slowly documenting and continuing this process, and in some way our Bunuba people and myself believe that he'll tell us where he is one day.
I'm talking to Joe Ross, a Bunuba man who's searching for the skull of Jundamara. And part of this process, Joe Ross, has been to talk to people who've even seen the collection and seen the heads that William Greener had.
Yeah, well, there's always a lot of conjecture, or has been a lot of conjecture, surrounding the where Jundamara's head went, but also whether his head ever made it to Derby. And I noticed a recent book, which I haven't read yet, whether it would be of interest to me, I don't know. But we've engaged a very experienced and professional researcher, and we're doing this, taking this step by step, so that on the basis that we make a statement that we have found him, we actually know that we've found him. But in ourselves, we'll know we've found him anyway, from Bunuba's people's perspectives. So Cressida has been working both in Australia and in England on our behalf. And when we worked to the point that we had evidenced up until about 1965, it was on the basis of former employees like Dennis Barrett, who was an apprentice, and he gave evidence that he saw two skulls that were in the factory. He helped Leighton Greener, the last director of the Birmingham factory, ammunition arms factory, to disperse the collection. He actually assisted his boss, old Leighton, and there was always common knowledge that one of them was of a Aboriginal chieftain from Australia called Pigeon, and then that really fired us up from a Bunuba's perspective that we're nearly there. And then after that, as to the collection and where it was dispersed, the documentation of that was well done for the bird collection, but for some reason Leighton Greener had not documented what he'd done with the two skulls. And we have a interview with old Dennis Barrett before he died in England, and a lady that worked in reception there. But we do know that Leighton Greenough was all about preserving things, and even bequeathed his body and his will to his whole body to medical science.
He sounds like
a bit strange, yeah.
An interesting man.
To save the cost of getting buried, I guess, for his family.
Do we know what condition the five skulls of interest are, and how they've been preserved, and how they're currently being archived?
The ones we were looking for, which in Cressida's words, that had experienced trauma and basically had bullet holes or had been shot in the skull, or in particular the as far as the sort of newspapers and the documentation of the day of being shot with a shotgun, and that is looking for skulls that experienced trauma. And these are the ones with either bullet holes to the forehead or to the back of the head or the temple and that. And they're the ones we're focusing in on at the moment. And not to say that any one of the five could be Janamara's head. And the other very important document we're looking for is the actual register of the whole 150. So we've got to the point now of approaching the West Australian government, trying to get assistance in carrying out a forensic study of the skulls. And this would then lead back to maybe DNA and genetic linkages with our Bunuba people. And not so much, I guess, with someone like me who comes from the eastern side of Gigi Gorge in Dangu. All of my country's out that side. But the families that, the existing families we know, were either indirectly or directly related to Janamara. And there's some families in town here, like the King family. There's the Muller family in Nookinbar, and a couple of others in our Bunuba crew who could possibly be genetically, as sort of sterile and clinical that sounds, in a Western sense, but genetically linked to Janamara. And so we're hoping to carry out a forensic study.
And that all costs money, it takes time, you've got to get agreement from the institution that's holding the skulls, don't you?
Yeah. And you know, there's the museums now, thank God, over in England now, are starting to become a bit more open to the idea of a repatriation of human remains throughout the world of the human remains they have, not only of Australian Indigenous peoples, but America and other places, you know.
Joe, I know this story is going to continue. It's a story that's been told for many decades and will continue to be told, but I do hope that we can follow the search and maybe see some resolution for Bunuba people.
I just hope when we do find him, it'll be just another great sequel in an amazing set of events, especially over the last fortnight or so. If you're out there at Winyana Gorge, it was just one of those moments in time you'll remember for the rest of your life, I think.